Blog Talk Radio.
I'm getting down to the sum of this, the sum of that, the sum of everything.
Come,
okay, another Friday extra special Scientology edition of Come Get Some. Today with the fantastic guest, Antonio Ortega. It's part one of our conversation. I've also, over the course of the week, have been in contact with Lori Hodgson. I hope I'm saying her name right there. But she's somebody who's been a victim of the disconnection policy of Scientology when her children went into the Sea Org at a young age. And she hasn't been able to see them since. Now, like I said, I've been in touch with her. We had a few, you know, few brief interactions through email. And, you know, she's still getting herself over. Last year, I believe it might have been the first POW-style video Scientology put out. I might be wrong there. But her children put out some POW-style videos, you know, talking about what's wrong with their mom and why they can't see her and how it's her fault on Good Morning America, and she's had a hard time coming back and talking about that in places. So she may be a future guest here on the show. In the meantime, what I've done is offered her, because it can't hurt to have these letters out in various formats, various ways they can possibly reach her kids, that I would read those letters online, and she said that would be fine. So I'm going to go ahead and do that for Lori here today. We start 5 years ago. 5 years ago, this all happened. And she wrote this open letter that was posted on today's guest, Tony Ortega's Underground Bunker website. And here's the letter. Dear Jessica and Jeremy, I have no way of reaching you directly, so I'm giving this a try. I'm asking all of my friends, family, and anyone else that gets this letter to please pass it on to each of you. Despite what you might have been told, I'm doing well in all areas of my life. The only thing missing is the two of you. I'm still the same mom who loves you both very much. But I want you to understand that I will never go back to the Church of Scientology. You have both asked me to talk to the International Justice Chief and get back in good standing with the Church. I cannot agree to this. I am not a part of the Church anymore, and I do not have to go by their rules. I am free now to think for myself and do what I think is best. I don't agree with the Church's disconnection policy that both of you are following, forcing you to stay away from me. Your grandmother and I will not disconnect from you, and we will continue to love you. I really want you both to think long and hard about this disconnection that is keeping you away from us. Do you both really never want to see me and your grandmother again? Do you never want to see the rest of the family because your grandmother and I won't go back to the Church? If you both want to stay in Scientology, we respect that. But at the same time, you need the respect that we don't want to be a part of it anymore. If I were in your shoes, I would never agree to this disconnection. I would tell the Church that I would remain a part of my family's life. I would never allow the Church to force me to disconnect from the people I love. Your grandfather is 75. Your grandmother is turning 75. And I am turning 50. Time is going by fast, and we should all enjoy many more good times together. You both know the reasons why I resigned from the Church. It was mainly because of the way you were heavily recruited to be staff or in the Sea Org at only 15 years old. I wanted you both to stay in school and get a full education. I fought with the Church because my parental rights were being violated. I also saw what you both went through while being recruited, and what you both went through while being in the Sea Org. I wrote everything that happened in A Mother's Heartbreak, which it would be good if you both read so you can really see what happened. Forever loving you both, your mom. Now, I can say that I don't know Lori more than a couple interactions we've had on email, and I understand her not necessarily being ready to speak, because I have no emotional attachment to this family. And this is hard to read, but there's more. That was 5 years ago. Here we go. Just within the last year is when she saw those videos pop up on Good Morning America. And this is with on a mothersheartbreak.com. This is what Lori wrote to her children. Jessica and Jeremy, I'm hoping you read this. I am responding to your interviews that the Church of Scientology instructed you both to do and sent to ABC. Here is a link to your interviews that was aired on Good Morning America May 2nd, 2016. Jeremy, this is the text to your interview. So Jeremy goes on to say, she keeps going to the media and putting our personal information and our life for the world to see with, you know, false information, and which is just going to upset us. Lori responds, son, first of all, if I have said anything false, please tell me what it is so we can talk about it. Secondly, Jeremy, you know I have done everything to try to talk to you privately. I have called you many times, and after I leave a message, your phone number is changed. I've tried to send you messages on social media myself, through friends. I've even gone to Texas and tried to talk to you. Scientology always intervenes, and this is why I'm trying to talk with you with the media's help. I would like more than anything just to be able to sit down with you and your sister and talk about our situation without anyone intervening. Can we please do that, son? You have my number, and I would love to hear from you. Jessica, here is the text to your interview. Jessica goes on to say, I don't believe that she really wants a relationship with me. I think it is more important for her to have this vendetta against my church than to have a relationship with me. Lori responds, Jessica, I want a relationship with you and your brother. I miss you both terribly and can't believe we have been kept apart for over 5 years because of this disconnection. My vendetta is against the Scientology disconnection policy that is keeping us apart, and that is all. I simply want to be your mom. I don't care if you and Jeremy do Scientology, and I have said that many times. I can't be your mom, though, because of Scientology. I have to go back and do the steps that are required by Scientology to be able to be your mom. I am not the one putting up the requirements. I'm not asking you to give up your religion. I'm just asking to be able to be in your life. Scientology is setting the demands, not me. I love you, honey, and I wish you just to be able to say that all this to you in person. Please, Jessica, call me and let's get our lives back together again. I will never stop fighting for our reconnection. I promise that. I love you both, Jessica and Jeremy, with all my heart. Love always, your mom. Wow. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit. I've seen the videos too, and when you say your mother chose to have a vendetta against the church over having a relationship with you, that's problematic because she's your mother. She doesn't have a choice in this. She just wants to be your mom and have you in her life. The Church of Scientology, as Lori puts forth in her letter, is making the rules here. Now, your family is all you got in the beginning. You're born from your family. Your mother does not care that you practice Scientology, but she would accept you with open arms, and no one's going to blame you for all this time that you spent away not being with her. I don't think like you because I wasn't brought up and born and raised in Scientology. I can't be in your head, but I can tell you, if my choice is between our way or the highway, which is the Scientology way, or unconditional love of a parent, I'm probably going to go unconditional love 110% of the time. Now, there's a lot more to this story. There's a lot more to Lori's story. This isn't the whole picture here. So hopefully we'll get to talk about it more. And also, it's covered very extensively on Tony Ortega's website, tonyortega.org, the underground bunker. So hopefully we'll get to do that. And I really hope that this reaches Jeremy and Jessica, and I hope you guys see. I know it's not 100% something that can be put on you, and that's why people aren't going to be mad at you or upset with you about this disconnection that's happened the last 5 years. I mean, you did miss your grandfather's 80th birthday. And he did nothing. He didn't say anything negative. He just happens to be your grandfather who has a relationship with your grandmother and your mother. One of these things is not like the other. And really the decision to turn your back unfortunately, Jessica and Jeremy are on you, and I really hope that that something changes with that for you guys and for Lori and your entire family. So that was that. Before I get on to Tony Ortega, I did get to have a conversation with a past guest again, and we had a really good conversation, and I want you to hear it. So here it is.
From the road on the Squeeze My Cans Across America tour, here she is, Kathy Schenkelberg. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. You're my first guest from Scientology ever, and now you're on the road, literally on the road with your tour. How's that been going?
Well, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been a lot of work in the sense that I'm doing the show, I'm driving to different venues, I'm booking the show, I'm learning about contracts, and oh my gosh, I am learning so much about how to put up a show. So it's been really fun, though.
Yeah, it's like a process, because when I first talked to you, you were doing your second show only ever, right, with this, and now this is like really truly a one-woman operation that you're trying to make happen here.
Right, we talked a year ago. I had done the workshop, and then I think I was doing the Hollywood Fringe, and then it's really kind of taken off. I learned how to, what do you call it, Twitter and tweet and all that stuff, and I'm still learning that whole game. I don't have a lot of followers yet, but the ones I have are true blue, so that's great. But then I started getting calls because so-and-so would contact a cousin or a sister or a friend in another state. And all of a sudden I'd say, hey, who do you know in Cleveland, or who do you know in Davenport, Iowa? Because I like hitting these smaller towns. It's really fun, and it's a great group of people that are interested in the subject matter, ironically enough.
Yeah, I'm real excited for you. It seems like there's a lot of buzz around it everywhere it goes. I'm always seeing these reviews of it, and I see it's been also labeled as one of those things, one of the go-to places to go for information on Scientology, right up there with like the Underground Bunker and Lair Remedy Show and all those things. So that's pretty great, and I'm really happy for you on that.
Yeah, you're so sweet. I know. I'm like have to pinch myself. I'm like, I don't have. Look, I have a lot of friends and support and love, but essentially I'm the one making the phone calls and booking things. But it's okay because I like to keep busy. When you meet me in person, you'll understand. I don't sit still very, very easily. Except in the car, which I have to, but every once in a while a trucker will see me dancing and you know, naked, of course.
Of course.
I roll. Yeah, really cool naked with my gypsy beads. Hey, I was going to tell you something, and now I'm limiting. You realize we're going to Edinburgh. I hired a producer to go to the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, and we're going in August of 2017. So I'm actually going to Chicago to the Greenhouse Theater. I'm doing the show there. Then after that, I go to Nashville. Then I'm confirming at 3 p.m. today in Omaha, Nebraska, Davenport, Iowa, and then I have a break, and I'm still trying to book Tampa and St. Petersburg. If I do, you'll have to come up.
I will.
I'm waiting to hear from a couple theaters there. And no, I'm not going to take it to Clearwater. That's stupid.
That would be awesome. come on.
I'm not taking it. No. You know, there's such a thing called poking the bear.
Yeah.
That is like, I'm not into it. Then I go to, I'm waiting to confirm Pittsburgh, and then I'm booked in St. Louis. And then, exciting for me, is Denver. I'm waiting to hear from Denver, Colorado, the week of HowdyCon.
Oh, the same week. That's perfect.
Same weekend. And then I wrote a cabaret show called Squeezing My Cans Again, which I've written some original music, and I parody music, and
oh.
I sing. It's a sung version of the show. I'm going to do it at a gay bar in Chicago, because I used to sing in gay bars, and God, they're a perfect audience. They love me.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. That's all great news. You're going international.
Yeah, and And yeah, I'm waiting to hear from London and Manchester. I keep getting calls from some ex-Scientologists there, and they're actually helping me book venues in for after Edinburgh Festival. And then I'm going to go to Germany, where I have tons of relatives, and I did a TV show in Germany, and so I'm trying to. Yeah, I used to speak German, so I'm writing, I'm translating part of the show in German. And if I have time, I'll do it there. But you know, everything costs money, so
yeah.
I'm launching a Hatch Fund, which is for theater things. It's a crowdfunding site. The 501c3 write-off. So I'm launching that this week or next week.
Okay.
In order to be able to afford to go, but I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm real happy. I got to tell you, I have my 1 year anniversary show next week on Thursday. I'm gonna be celebrating a year of podcasting, and I do it with.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Who are you doing it with? I can't believe it. I thought you were on for 5 years. I don't know why I thought it was only 1 year.
Because I'm that damn good. You've been ahead of.
You've got some love out there, man. You've built that. You're doing your little one-man show.
A little bit. Yeah, I got G.K. Bowles coming back, mutual friend of ours, who I heard about you from. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, we've already recorded, and it's really funny. So you'll see next week. You actually come up quite prominently in that conversation, so you have to listen to that.
I love her. She's a tiger. I love her.
Yeah, she says she's always been a fan of yours since before she knew about your Scientology involvement. Apparently she had no idea.
Yeah, well, I had a thriving voiceover career. It's kind of tanked. I mean, I you know my story. And then when you see my story, you'll see because, you know, I was making a lot of money. Of course, it got siphoned off
from
Scientology. But essentially, I gave it to them, but I didn't know how they knew how much I had.
Right.
Until it was gone.
Episodes 28 through 30, everybody. You can hear about that story. And also, and Squeeze My Cans on tour. I can't wait to see that. I really can. I think it's great what you're doing. And it's so funny because I don't think a lot of people realize, and this happens, I guess, a lot in broadcasting, and it happens a lot with the ex-Scientologists. And a lot of my guests is, you know, we've kind of become friends since you've been on the show, and I'm really happy for everything that you get and comes your way. You deserve it, and there's just so many good people have come out of there that have been on the show and have just related that way.
I mean, you know, you have your niche, and you have been supportive of a lot of people, and you have educated yourself and your audience, so that's to be commended. That's really good.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. I still have some work to do on this very same show that this will be broadcast on, this conversation. I'll be talking to Tony Ortega, and I eat a little humble pie there as well, because I don't know anything compared to that man.
Tony knows
his stuff.
He's a pioneer for being a non-Scientologist. He was a pioneer for exposing the cult, man. It's amazing what he's done, and the years and the time he's put in, and the shit he's been through. So huge kudos to him, and send him a big hello from me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you that he's sort of he's something that's inspiring to me as well. You know, I know I'm not on his level or anything like that, but I aspire to be as well-spoken on the subject as he is, and really represent properly, because something I bring up to him that you guys, everybody will hear later, the listeners and all, but he's got a certain level of integrity to his reporting, and that's something to be revered, I think.
Yeah, and that's cool that you acknowledge that, but, you know, don't discount what you're doing, and also you're creating something all your own. You know, what Leah Remini and Mike Rinder are doing is incredibly awesome, and the fact that she is a celebrity, she's able to reach more people, and so I'm in awe of her as well. You're not a celebrity, but you are one person making a difference. I'm not a celebrity, I'm just one person who is telling a story, hoping to maybe reach out to someone vulnerable like I was.
Yep.
Not just about cults, but being taken in by sociopaths or you know, being manipulated in a group, in any type of group, not just Scientology. So, you know, don't discount what you're doing, my friend.
Oh no, I try to take pride in it. I mean, I know what I'm doing because, you know, it comes off a little defensive, I think, but I like to make sure people know that it's not making me any more money or taking me any less personal time to put into an extra show on the subject. So I do realize what I'm doing.
you reminded me of something I wanted to point out, and I don't know if anybody's going to hear. I mean, I know they're going to hear your podcast, but understand what I'm saying. Pop Sugar did a thing on the top six shows, which was awesome to see in Scientology, exposing Scientology, and they put mine as number six and said, look, it's a theater piece, it's not a TV thing, but you should see it anyway. I was so incredibly humbled by that. And then the site Cracked did a piece on the whole audition, Tom Cruise audition, and in the piece they wrote, yeah, she's... you know, she couldn't have been dating, auditioning for Tom Cruise because he was dating Nazim. And then Mark Headley came back and said, no, they were holding auditions for Tom Cruise, blah, blah, blah. And then the writer, who I want to reach out to, said, yeah, she or others are just trying to sell their story. And, you know, 5 minutes of fame. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. I never sold anything. You mean they pay for that shit? People approached me because they heard about my 80-second soundbite in my show about the audition I went into at the Celebrity Center thinking I was auditioning for a video. So no, I didn't reach out to the media. I didn't reach out to anybody. They contacted me. So I just want to say that I didn't make a dime off anything, anything written about me, no. And it would have been nice, considering the fact that I was cleaning houses and walking dogs to make money, to make a couple bucks, but I never did it for that reason. Someone approached me, so there, that's my chip on my shoulder.
Well, I said to Chris Shelton, I said, I hope you guys are making money. I really do. You deserve it. I mean, that's not why you do it, but I hope, you know.
I make 10%. I make 10, you know, sometimes I was making, when I first started doing the show, maybe I didn't make anything last year because you pay into it. You know, my director was using her credit card. I didn't have a credit card. I went through bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I lost my home. You know, so it takes time to rebuild that. Now, I broke or poor? No, but I'm hand to mouth. But that's okay because I'm happy.
Happiness.
I'm happier this way than I was in the cult. So.
That's right. That's right.
Ooh,
that's awesome.
I got a little fire going. I'm a little hot there.
I didn't mean to get you fired up, but it's good. It's good though. It's good to get. It's good to vent. Oh man. Well, I'm so happy for you. Was there anything else you wanted to get out there to the listening audience?
Yeah, I would love it if they checked out the website www.squeezemycans.com. Like it on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I don't know any other social media. I'm sure there's other stuff out there, but that's about all I can handle right now and while I'm juggling everything else. But it would be word of mouth. And if you want the show in your city, you need to contact me, squeezemycans@gmail.com, and then in the subject line, put, I heard you on, you know, come get some, okay?
So, that's awesome.
That would be wonderful.
That would be awesome. Let me ask you, this is me being selfish because I got listeners, like, I actually have listeners, like, all over the world, believe it or not, and, you know, maybe one here and there in other countries. But when will you be, if you make it to St. Petersburg and Tampa, what's that, like, 6 months away, probably 6-7 months away?
Oh, no, I'll be in Europe. Well, if I raise the money, I'll be in Edinburgh and London and Germany in August, September, October. I'm shooting for April. Third week in April and into May.
That sounds good.
May. So it'll be the end of April, early May. I'm going to call the producer. I don't want to say her name, but she's in Tampa and I love her and she's a wonderful director. She's the artistic director of a theater there. And then I've also reached out to a theater in St. Petersburg, Florida. Because I worked at a theater in St. Pete, so I have some contacts there. So.
Oh, excellent!
Anyway,
so you're on your way.
Anyone, and also Sarasota would be so great.
Sarasota, right now you're on your way back to your home, to Chicago, right? Like that's where you're on your way to, right this second.
Yeah. Yes, and I took the southern route to beat the, you know, to offset the weather, and oh my God, No offense, Texas and Oklahoma. You say Nebraska, I'm from Nebraska, is boring. This is so boring. Oh, my God. I had to stop a few times. My eyes were, like, falling asleep. But I've got another. I did 10 hours yesterday, a little over 10. I'm doing 10 hours today to get into Chicago. And then, yeah, I'm going to be in Chicago for 6 weeks. It's going to be fun.
Yep, and
it's a show, and if you know anybody in Chicago, pick up a ticket. Tickets are only $25.
That's good.
I swear to God, if anybody asks me for a free ticket, I'm just going to, unless you're, like, living, under a bridge or something, $25.
That's every seat in the house, right?
Drink afterwards. Yeah, it's a 60-seat, I think they can squeeze in 68, but, you know, that's how I get paid. You buy tickets. So, you know, it's supporting theater and really art.
Yep.
You know, we need more art in this world. Not only visual theater, music, it's a podcast. We need art.
So we got Greenhouse Theater in Chicago February 6th through March 12th, it looks like. And then you're going to be hitting Tennessee.
February 16th. February 16th.
Oh, you got to update the website, Kathy.
I should look at the website.
It says February 6th. They got to change that. Needs a 1 in front of the 6.
Oh,
February
16th.
Yeah. Be March 12th. April 7th through 9th, is that correct for Nashville?
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll post Omaha and I'll post Pittsburgh and St. Louis. St. Louis is happening at the end of May or first week in June for sure at the St. Louis Actors Studio.
Excellent.
So,
wow.
If you're in St. Louis, it'll be on the website soon, and we're going to do 5 shows. Also, the last thing I want to tell you is I'm hooked up with the hooking up. My daughter says that means something different, but I'm not hooking up in the way you think I'm hooking up, although I am sometimes, but that's a different podcast. Okay, so I'm collaborating with the Trevor Project because I want to do... I'd like to do Actors Night and charity benefits. So the Trevor Project is important because I wanted to work with the LGBTQ community. And when I researched, the Trevor Project is more national and international. So when I travel, I'm doing a show where the proceeds go to the Trevor Project. So that'll be also listed on the website next week. We're going to start
nice.
Our first Actors Night for the Trevor Project at the Greenhouse. And then I'm also going to be doing that in Pittsburgh and St. Louis as well. So that's my thing. That's my charity group that I'm giving back to. I'm hoping Nora Crest. I'm going to fly Nora Crest into Chicago to do talkback. I think you know Nora.
Yeah.
Interviewed her, and she's lovely. And I asked her if she would come in town and see the show and be able to speak with me at Talkback on Actors Night for the Trevor Project. So
yeah, Nora's one of the most relatable people I've ever met in my life. She's really cool. She's really cool.
She's lovely. So
yeah, I still communicate with her sometimes. Let me ask you real quick. I know you're trying to wrap this up, but you're traveling by yourself. You have no travel partner?
No, God, no. I love. I'm a gypsy. I am going to. I travel by myself. This is my 8th back and forth across the Midwest in a year and 2 months. That means I've done this different back at 2,000 miles for 8 times. My car is packed. It's because I have to travel with stuff, and it's not that packed. But if you saw my picture on Facebook,
yeah.
You see the clothes hanging up behind me.
I'm going to use that picture.
Yeah, no, I travel. Yeah, do. Yeah, but I do. I travel, and I'm trying to get a loan for a van because I want to travel with. It's going to be easier to travel in a van for a year than my little SUV.
Yeah. Wow. Well, be safe.
So
that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Oh yeah. No, I haven't had much. It's been fine. People are nice, and I'm. My daddy taught me well,
Very good. Well, be safe out on the road and enjoy this ride. You're on a heck of a journey, and you're bringing us all with you. And we really, most of us who know about you and know what you're doing and what you've been through, we really appreciate it.
Well, you for calling. Have a great interview with Tony if I'm at the tail end or before. Just have a great time.
No problem. Thank you very much. Stay safe.
Okay, bye, Ann.
All right, so that was Kathy Schenkelberg. So really great having her again. I always love talking to Kathy. But now I'm going to go ahead and get to part one of Tony Ortega, with a lot of people waiting for. And we have a great conversation, a great start to the conversation. And next week it even picks up more. So here it is, part one. Stay tuned for the end. I have a few more comments to end this show. But here's Tony Ortega.
All right, my guest today is pretty much, in my opinion, the go-to authority on the subject of Scientology. He is the author of The Unbreakable Miss Lovely, and he's also the runner of the Underground Bunker at TonyOrtega.org. Please welcome to the show, Tony Ortega. How you doing, Tony?
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me on, man.
No, I'm glad to have you. When someone decides they're going to do what I'm doing here with this podcast, I make a short list of who I want, and you're at the top of that list, Tony, so I'm really glad to have you.
Well, what got you into doing this?
What got me into doing this?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I said it a few times on the show, and I never get tired of saying it because I want to make sure people understand why I do what I do. I first saw Scientology as a thing. I first learned about it in 2000. I guess it was between 5 and 7, whenever John Sweeney's UK show came out, a special on the whole abuse thing with Mike Rinder and such. That bothered me. But at the same time, you don't know what you can trust in media. Even back then, you know, right now media is a big issue. But back then, you're like, I don't know what's real, what's not. And I remember also seeing the Lisa McPherson story because I immediately started researching after seeing that special. You know, and again, this is 2005. I talk about 2005, but you started back in 95 or 92, was it?
95.
Okay. So I'm going and I'm looking at this. And what happens, you talk to people, they don't really know much about it. They know they hear it's a funky cult thing. And then it goes away. And then you have the I think someone's breaking a wall down in there.
Yeah,
sorry
about that.
No problem. So I saw the whole thing with Anonymous, and then of course there's the Tom Cruise videos came out, and then there was Going Clear and Leah Remini leaving, and then the Leah Remini show. And I've noticed every time there's been a lot of buzz about Scientology and a lot of talk about it, it's died down. And Scientology's been permitted to keep going. So I figured, wait a minute, I have a podcast. And I did interview Kathy Schenkelberg just a few months ago, about 4 or 5 months ago. And I'm going, you know, I mean, I like my Thursday show. It's a variety celebrity of the month show type of thing. I have actors, writers, singers, artists. And I'm going, I'll add a Friday show and I'll do Scientology predominantly because I think it needs to keep, I think the conversation needs to keep going, and I can help that happen by having people like yourself on the show and getting the word out and keeping it out.
Well, it does feel like there's more of a momentum going now, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think I said in the message I sent to you, and I've sent it to a few people, and that was that not only are more people willing to talk, more people are willing to listen, and I think you have to jump into that because it will go away. It will fade out.
Right. And just today, Giovanni Ribisi did the classic thing where he went on the radio to promote this new show he's got, and the hosts couldn't help themselves. They had to ask him about, you know, what's going on with all this controversy. And he did the classic thing where he said Leah just must have a personal problem and she's probably making money. And, you know, if anybody's curious about it, they should just read a book. So, you know, once again, somebody who's completely involved in the, you know, he has seen the problems in Scientology, he won't discuss it. He just expects it all to go away. And that's really interesting to me because Giovanni's own family right now is going through some serious issues with Scientology. I broke the news that his daughter, Lucia Ribisi, had gone on a radio program with an assumed name to basically announce that she's out and that her father, a famous actor, had doubts. And Giovanni's in a very interesting position because his parents, they're no longer married, they're divorced, but they are two of the most hardcore, long-time, dedicated Scientologists there are. I mean, his parents are the kind of long-time Scientologists that are enforcers. They'll call up other Scientologists if they think they're not, you know, being militant enough.
Wow.
So that's how hardcore Vonnie's parents are, and his daughter is out and talking about it. That really puts him in a tough position. Now, see, that's what I'd like to hear him talk about. Not just the same old line they're always told to say, which is, if you're curious about it, read a book. Well, Vonnie, we have read the books, and we've read the secret teachings, and we've read the upper levels. We know all about what Scientology does, and we've also talked to many people whose families were ripped apart. Why can't Giovanni Ribisi deal with that? And I think he's in a tough position right now. I don't really expect him to say much on the radio, but I am curious to see how he's going to deal with the fact that his own family is going through that right now.
Yeah, I was just talking about that on one of my other shows. When I did my introduction, I went into something about Donald Trump, and I made the comment about how I know when I say something negative about Donald Trump, automatically I'm going to lose listeners. And I know every time I say something positive about Donald Trump, automatically I'm going to lose listeners. And I think that's what he's looking at. He doesn't want to rock the boat because he's got a show to do, or?
Well, I mean, Jason Begay explained this to me years ago, that they actually have a training that they put celebrities through. They're actually trained how to deal with these questions, and they're taught never to discuss what they actually do in Scientology. You're never going to get Vonnie Ribisi or Danny Masterson or Laura Prepon to actually explain what they do in auditing, what they do in a sec check, what's in the PTSSP course. You know, they've been taught you never discuss that. Always tell them the same thing. Get a book, buy a book, make it sound like it's helped your life, tell people to buy a book. So, it's that's what they're doing. That's what they're sent out to do. Most of the time they're told never to say a thing. On the Donald Trump thing, I will point out that I've had a few readers are not happy with me. the fact that, I have pointed out that numerous people for more than a year have pointed out the interesting parallel in style between Donald Trump and L. Ron Hubbard. And I don't think you can deny it. I think that, L. Ron Hubbard, whether you like the guy or not, had a particular kind of way of telling tall tales and being an authoritarian. And it's kind of uncanny the way now there are different differences, right? I mean, Whatever you think of L. Ron Hubbard, the guy could put a sentence together. He did have the concentration to put whole books together. Our president doesn't seem to have that skill. But, in general, they have very similar styles. And if you voted for him, then that's probably the kind of style you like, That's not a criticism of him. Second of all, I don't know. I've seen, people have made that observation, and it seems like every day I'm seeing it more and more. I run a website that's about Scientology, and I typically don't have any politics on it. But what's going on in our country right now, it's hard not to at least make some observations. And it turns some people away. But, it's a very unique time. But then the question is, so the big question, and the only reason I really brought Trump up in my website at all, because I didn't mention the guy through the whole campaign, except at one time, because people kept saying, oh, he's like Hubbard. And I just wanted to point out to people, okay, yeah, he's like Hubbard, but I haven't seen any connections between Trump and Scientology. And I went out of my way to say, listen, just to make sure you understand, Hillary Clinton's connections to Scientology are much more troubling, because when Bill Clinton was president, Scientology never had a better friend in the White House. I mean, it was Bill Clinton who signed off on giving the Church of Scientology taxes and status. And Bill Clinton also went to bat for Scientology overseas with his State Department. So I was really curious. If Hillary became president, I didn't know, was she going to be the same as Bill and be real friendly to Scientology? I honestly didn't know. I sent messages to both campaigns to see if they would discuss Scientology or not, and I never got a response. So anyway, Hillary's not president. Trump is. So what's his attitude going to be towards Scientology? Again, he might remind some people of Hubbard, but that doesn't mean he has anything to do with Scientology. And I haven't seen any significant connections. There's some very tenuous connections. People keep pointing out Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of Florida, has been friendly to Scientology in Florida. She's accepted donations from them. They've thrown, you know, fundraising parties for her. And Donald Trump's been very friendly to her. But that doesn't mean that there's a connection between Trump and Scientology. So I've got some conservative friends, and some of them have actual connections in Washington, and they are assuring me that they really believe Donald Trump will be convinced to crack down on Scientology and take away their tax-exempt status.
Hmm.
I think that'd be very interesting. That would be something I'd report, and I'd be very, very interested to see that. But then on the other hand, you look at how friendly Trump is to the what I call the merchants of woo, you know, the anti-vax crowd, climate change denial crowd, and that suggests to me that, you know, he's going to be like some other Republicans who see the word church and just decide, well, I can't criticize that. So I don't know which way it's going to go. And, you know, until I see something, you know, happen, I'm just, you know, again, if you go to my website, you're probably not going to see politics in the post. But if I, you know, I did report recently that Trish Duggan was seen at the inaugural. And that's a big deal because she and her husband are the richest Scientologists in the world. They're worth billions of dollars. And she was seen, talking to Newt Gingrich and talking to Kellyanne Conway. And I think that's definitely a sign that David Miscavige and Scientology want to get some kind of influence on the White House. So we'll see.
Well, and this is more just an observation on my part, not factual in any way, but my thought process on that is Donald Trump seems to like anybody who likes him. So, you know, I mean, there's not much of a connection that you can draw a line to. However, we have seen that there is a support system for Donald Trump within Scientology. They like him.
The Scientologists definitely like him. There was that interesting story out of the Los Angeles Times which showed that the only precinct in Los Angeles that went for Trump was the one that includes the Scientology headquarters. I've always perceived that Scientologists tend to lean more right than left. I do know left-leaning Scientologists, but most of them tend to be right-leaning, and it doesn't surprise me that they support Trump. And you're right. Trump seems to respond to that. And if they're sending Trish Duggan to the inaugural, I would not be surprised if they send Tom Cruise after too long, you know? And so then we just have to see if that influences him or not. So either way, I mean, if they safe point him or if he goes after them, I'll be writing about it. I'll be interested.
I'll be reading it. I want to say, because you said there, the whole thing you just said there just put a lot of things in context that people probably ask you every day about. The thing that I think of when I think of you, Tony, is integrity. And I really mean that, because when I first started looking into Scientology, I found your website, I found your reports, and a lot of times when I read websites like yours and like Xenu TV, which is John Blank.
Mark Bunker.
Mark Bunker, thank you. Mark Bunker, I wonder, and I think you understand this, I'm not trying to say anything negative about you, but in my mind, the first time I see those articles, I'm thinking tabloid journalists at first. And the reason you think that is who dedicates the whole life to the subject of a controversial thing like Scientology, where everything they ever say is questioned, right? Brought into question and thought of as not necessarily legitimate. But what I found with you, Tony, is even to myself, and you might not even remember this, but after my conversation with Kathy, I made a few comments on Twitter and you corrected me on them. And there were innocent mistakes I made. But it doesn't matter if it's the smallest thing that makes Scientology look bad and fits the agenda, you won't go with it if you can't quantify it. And that tells me something about your character.
Well, you said a couple different things there. Thanks for the, you know, support and taking a look at my stuff. I do write about other subjects, but I do have a passion for Scientology. I just made a decision to give myself the assignment of being a beat reporter on Scientology. I've always had a great respect for beat reporters. I got to know some baseball beat reporters and, of course, various government beat reporters during my career in journalism. And I always thought they had the most thankless, difficult, and yet rewarding jobs there are. Because when you're a beat reporter, it means that you're covering one subject and you get to know it better than anybody else. And you're just watching for any new development. And so I just thought, you know what, Scientology deserves that. Because as you were mentioning before, what happens is somebody will come along and do a great expose and, you know, big story in the Los Angeles Times back in the day or Tampa Bay Times more recently or you know, Time Magazine or New Yorker, and it causes an uproar for a couple of days, and then everyone forgets about it.
Right.
And I thought, you know, this subject deserves, a beat reporter that just is always watching what's happening. It's not always a big story. Sometimes it's a small story. But, you know, I decided that I wanted that job, and I gave it to myself. And I've, you know, been doing it daily since, April 2011. It's just been so much fun because there is something, there's enough going on with Scientology around the world that there's something to write about every day. And then, the other thing that motivates me that you hit on there is, when I decided to do that, there was already plenty of stuff out there on the internet, but it frustrated me that people would spread a bunch of, the internet has so much garbage on it.
Yeah.
And I would see a story where people were just obviously wrong, accusing Scientology of something they hadn't done. And the response I'd get from somebody is, yeah, but it makes them look bad, so why not do it?
Right.
And I thought, but that's not good because then Scientology is going to come along, prove that they're being lied about, and they're going to look like a victim.
Yeah.
Let's find out what's true about this organization, good or bad. And so one of the things that's really motivated me is to try to solve some of these mysteries that people talk about but never look into. So just to give you a small example, everybody would talk about the strange death of Flo Barnett, the mother-in-law of David Miscavige, leader of the Church of Scientology. And it just sounded so impossible that this small, older woman that was supposed to have killed herself with a rifle by shooting herself four times. And it just, it's just impossible. It couldn't have happened.
Right.
So I actually tracked down the detective who investigated the scene. And I was shocked when he told me, no reporter's ever called me before. So this is one of those things where everybody's outraged and everyone assumes he's wrong, but nobody ever talks to the guy.
Right.
So I talked to him, and he explained to me how hard they worked on that case and why they did conclude that he was telling me that when it comes, there's a whole sort of pathology of suicide where certain people do it certain ways, men do it certain ways, women do it certain ways. And he said that it's very common that women tend to take pills, right? They tend not to shoot themselves. But when they do shoot themselves, they have a hard time shooting themselves in a lethal area. They're so afraid of what they're doing. And sure enough, those first three shots were like through her skin. You know what I'm saying? Like
right.
One was through a breast implant.
Oh.
Okay? That's just not going to kill you. I'm sure it must have been horrible. She must have just been in shock the whole time. But this, he said only the fourth shot was to her head and killed her. So I understand why, and even after, you have to understand, Chris, even after I wrote that story, I knew that I wasn't going to be convincing people of anything, right? I mean, if you're skeptical that this woman killed herself, you're going to stay skeptical even after you read my story.
Right.
I thought it was at least worth getting the information down correctly. You know what I'm saying? So that was one. Another one that I wanted to solve was the question about OT-8. OTH is the highest level you can go to in Scientology, and there was this basic mystery about it, and that was the OT8 you get today at the top of the bridge after spending years in Scientology is not the same thing that they first gave to Scientologists when it originally came out in 1988, a couple of years after Hubbard died. And you can look at the original one. It's online. It's actually the thing about the OTA material that you see online, it's not something that was smuggled out of the church. It's something somebody wrote from memory after having been through it. But several people have gone through that and say it's accurate. And I interviewed one of them. His name is George White, and he was on the ship, Freewinds, in 1988 getting that original OTA. And we talked about it. I vetted him. There's other people that vouched for it. And I think we really settled the question that really was what Scientologists got that summer until they realized they had a disaster on their hands and got rid of it and replaced it. Because in that original OT-8, Hubbard reveals to them that he is the Antichrist and that, some other bizarre things that they no longer give that out. But that's another one of those things I was really glad to finally get somebody on the record under their own name discussing, yes, I was there, I did get this document, this is what we were taught. So that's the kind of thing that really motivates me, is to try to find those. And there's still more mysteries, you know. There's still some more, there's one I'm about to, address soon, involving a death years ago. Finally have some hard evidence about what actually happened, and that'll be coming soon. So those are the kind of things that motivate me to keep going.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The thing with that, I've heard that somewhere before, but I didn't know all the details about it. The Antichrist comment. What was? Do you have any speculation on what the goal was? What was he hoping would happen when people read that?
Well, you know, I think. What was Hubbard thinking when he wrote OTA? That's a good question.
What was Hubbard thinking at all?
I think that there was this essential sort of trickster element to L. Ron Hubbard's character that his Scientologists don't seem to recognize. I mean, this was a guy who literally was selling you a bridge. I mean, is there any more iconic symbol of a confidence trickster than the guy who sells you a bridge? I mean, it's almost like he wanted to be caught. You know, he was... I think he was a trickster character. I think he knew he liked to see how far he could push people, and you know, he if you read that issue, there's a tone to it as well. Like, I really feel like he's saying, "You suckers."
Right. That's what it sounds like.
By the time you get to OTA, you've given him so much money and so much time, and he's basically saying, "Ha ha, you know, I'm the Antichrist. I'm the person you're all supposed to fear." But, you know, it was really self-indulgent, and David Miscavige realized he had a disaster in his hand. He got rid of it.
Now I remember a story going back to when I first started researching after John Sweeney's special. You may have written it, or you may have been involved in it. I believe it was The Village, or the Daily Voice, or The Village Voice. The Village Voice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I remember trying to vet the source, even back then, going, is this a real news story? And it was back then. It felt like an isolated incident, but you probably won't recognize the story because there's dozens like this. But I remember it was a young blonde girl, about 15 years old, in the Sea Org, who her father really didn't want her in the Sea Org. He really wanted her to leave. And she was convinced to stay, and he disconnected. He was labeled SP. It was the first time I ever heard reference to this connection in SP other than the John Sweeney special. And she decided she was just desperately unhappy and she wanted out, but they weren't going to let her out. So she wrote a letter to her dad to come get her. And, of course, as you know, they read the letters. So that letter never made it to her dad, but they didn't tell her that. And she thought he gave up on her. So she gave up on life and killed herself. This is a very common thing, is it not?
Well, not common it is, but there are other stories like that. Yeah. You know, people have asked me, are there more suicides in Scientology than outside? And the problem with that is there are suicides and there are unusual suicides in Scientology, but in order to establish that there are more Scientologists killing themselves than other groups, you'd have to do a real kind of actuarial study, and I don't think anybody's done that. So, you know, people will tell you that more Scientologists kill themselves. People will tell you that more Scientologists die of cancer, but those are all anecdotal, and I don't think that scientifically you can say that it happens more in Scientology than elsewhere. But, you know, there's no question there have been unusual deaths, there have been unusual suicides, and then you can look at Scientology's just general view, which is that, you know, we're immortal beings that live countless times. So if you live countless, you know, millions and billions of lifetimes already, and you're going to live millions and billions of more lifetimes, then how much can this lifetime really matter? And so if Scientologists do have kind of a relaxed view about life and death and family, it comes from that philosophy. So, you know, one thing that, you know, you see is that when a Scientologist dies, you see other Scientologists not really, you know, they'll just be like, oh, great, see you next time. You know, it's like, okay, you're going to go get a new body and start over again. And so I'm not saying that there aren't Scientologists that are sad when somebody dies or there aren't families that are tight, but that philosophy underneath Scientology makes it so that the idea of your life, this lifetime, doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, it's just that story really stuck with me, and I was wondering, what was your first brush? When did you first learn about Scientology?
You know, I grew up in L.A., so it feels like I've always been hearing about it. I can vaguely remember when Hubbard died in 86 and reading some news stories about that. I would have been a young teenager at that time. And then, in 86, I would have been in college, now that I think about it. I remember Kurt Loder did some good stuff on MTV that I thought was really cool about Scientology. That was like in 95. And by then I had become a reporter. I had been a college English instructor, and I switched careers and became a reporter in Phoenix, Arizona, of all places, even though I'm from L.A. And I just stumbled on a great story. I saw a letter to the editor in a newspaper that was from a guy saying that, you know, you really messed up the story about me. I was a reporter for a weekly paper. That's something we always looked for, was when the daily paper had done something poorly or missed the point. And this guy was complaining that they had missed the point about his lawsuit, that he'd been sued by the Church of Scientology, who tried to keep secret about it. And I was just like, wow, that sounds like a story. So I contacted the guy, and his name was Rick Ross. And he's become, you know, one of the country's foremost cult experts. But back then, I was really the first person to write a full profile of him. And it involved a lot of different groups. He was actually more of a Bible expert than a Scientology expert. But it did have a pretty good selection of Scientology in that story. And I just thought it was great. And that story led me to another local guy in Phoenix that had been harassed by Scientology. His name was Jeff Jacobson. And so I got to know Jeff Jacobson. And, of course, Jeff Jacobson was involved with the Lisa McPherson Trust people later on. So one story just sort of led me to another. And I was fortunate that I worked for a news organization that encouraged that kind of thing, because they – you know, when you're working for a weekly and you have to do these big, long cover stories every month, you need to develop some areas of expertise.
Right.
And so I eventually moved back to Los Angeles, where I'm from, and was working for their newspaper there. And then I got to do some really great stories because, I mean, L.A. is one of the main places for Scientology. So that's where I got to do the Tori Christmas story about when she first came out of Scientology in 2001. And I got to write about Grant Barry. It just became something that I, you know, once you've got a bunch of sources, they're telling you about more things going on, and I just really enjoyed it, even though they, they did their best to make it not fun. You know, they had their attorneys complaining and intimidate us, but you know, it's just something that I, because one of the things that I enjoy was the more that I met people, the more I realized that that's what a story was. I mean, 2005, South Park, of course, taught the world about Xenu, which I had known since the early 90s because of the Los Angeles Times. And, you know, that's, for a lot of people, that's all it is, this goofy thing with Xenu and some celebrities. But by doing stories about people like Tori Christmas, I was starting to learn, no, this is a much more interesting story about people that have been harmed. And that really became my guiding sort of principle. I was away from the report from about 2002 to 2007. I was away from it because I was in some cities where there's not really any Scientology presence. But then I got to New York, the Village Voice, and Scientology exploded as a news story with Anonymous and Tom Cruise. And so then I started paying attention to it again. And it was Tori Christmas who called me up in March of 2008 and said, "Hey, do you want the first press interview with Jason Begay?" I said, "Of course." He just had that little video, but he hadn't talked to any reporters yet. And so, I got to write the first story about Jason, and then he came out to New York. We met. So, it's a story that's just sort of like fallen in my lap, or I keep running into it. And then I just decided, you know what, this is something that deserves real attention, and that's why I'm still doing it.
Was there a specific thing that really stood out to you that was like your breaking point? Because I know for me, like, you asked me how I got into it, and all of what I said is true, But my absolute breaking point where I said I'm doing a Friday show was the very first episode of Leah Remini. I was already tweeting back and forth with these I won't even give them credit anymore. I'm not going to give their names. You know who I'm talking about on the Twitter. And they were trashing Leah Remini, and they were trashing all the people who come on her show. And I would go back and forth with them because not because I think it's fun, because I don't want to troll anyone, even people that deserve it. But I was talking to them because it was confirmation for me to see this kind of activity in action and be involved in it and talk to these people. And you know, one of the things about Xenu, of course, is you bring it up. It's not because I think it's all about Xenu, because when you can't talk about it, you're showing me something. You're proving me something. But the big turning point for me was Amy Scobie was on the show, and they're like, look, she lied under oath, so she can't be trusted. And I'm saying, even if it's true that she lied under oath, not under pressure, but she lied, liars can be molested too, even if that's true, which I don't think it necessarily is. And that was my point when I said, I'm definitely doing this Friday show. I'm definitely covering this subject. But what was your breaking point? Was there one specific event?
I don't know if breaking point's the right thing to call it, but I mean, I had been, what convinced me to go from just writing something, you know, every couple of years or every few months to writing every day, what are the Squirrel Busters? I mean, that was a big turning point for me. I had been writing, in 2008, I wrote about Jason Begay. 2009, I wrote about a kid that came out, and what was his name? I'm starting to know, Daniel Montalvo. 2000, and by then I was starting to look at Marty's blog, Marty Rathman's blog, 2010, that did a couple stories. But then it was April 2011 when Marty Rathman wrote about these Squirrel Busters that had shown up outside his house. And he posted that first video of these guys standing on his porch with these GoPro cameras strapped to their heads. And it was so bizarre. And then I wrote about it for the Village Voice, and I talked to Marty, and he sent me some videos to put up online. And he was telling me, Tony, this is happening every day. This didn't just happen one day. And so I kept checking back with him and checking back with him. And, you know, I was – it was so mind-blowing to me that this Church of Scientology had basically sent a goon squad to harass this guy because he had once worked for them. In such bizarre ways, where they had T-shirts made up with his face on it, and,
yeah,
you know, they were following Marty and Monique wherever they went in town. And I was just, I, at some point after I'd written three or four stories, I thought, this is so strange. Here I am in New York City, spending most of my time with this newspaper covering the town, New York City. But on our website, I'm covering this breaking story in South Texas, and I have it completely to myself. It was really strange, and then a month or two later, a really great local reporter there in South Texas did some wonderful reporting on it, and then other people started to pick it up. But that was just kind of a wild moment for me. It's sort of, you know, you have these sort of moments where you realize what the internet can do, and that was one of them for me, where I think, here I am sitting in New York covering this thing happening in down to the very tip of South Texas as if I was there, and there's no other reporters covering it. And so that's when I started to think, you know, I could do this every day. Because I had been, just a little background, when I got to The Voice in 2007, one of my main duties was to try to convince the staff there that they needed to put more online. And I like to lead by example, so I tried to find something where I could put some little thing online every day. And so for 3 years, what I did was I found some really great stuff in the archives, wonderful Village Voice archives going back to the 50s. And every day I would find some little article from the 50s or the 60s, and I'd put it online. So I found, like, the first time Bob Dylan had ever been mentioned by the Village Voice, or the first time Woody Allen ever got mentioned, this new comedian in town. And I loved it, but nobody was reading it, you know. And then I suddenly realized, you know, every time I put anything about Scientology on the website, it goes crazy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that's when I decided, you know, I really love that archive project, but I'd rather do something about Scientology every day online. And it quickly became the most read – I became the most read blogger in the entire company because I was doing that. And so I don't know. And also I was having fun.
Right.
You know, I just love the idea that I was breaking a story about, and it's what drives me today is, you know, tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., is Tony going to have something that nobody else in the world has about something breaking in L.A., something in Australia, something in Europe? I just, you know, I'm a newspaper man at heart, and I just, nothing gets my blood pumping like a scoop. So that's what keeps me going. But that, you asked about a turning point. I guess I thought about it for a second, realized that was a turning point, was those squirrel busters.
Yeah.
They really did science paper, you know?
Yeah, I got to talk to Bert about that, Bert Leahy. That was... This, the whole thing is the word you said was perfect, bizarre.
All right, so that was part one of Tony Ortega. It really picks up. We really get to the meat of the conversation next Friday. We talk about Paulette Cooper and a lot of that happenings in and around that. We talk about around a little bit, and we also do 10 questions with Tony Ortega. He'll answer those 10 questions. And that's actually all I'm going to say for now. I will say Thursday next week is my year anniversary. I've been podcasting for a year. I'll be celebrating on Thursday with return guest GK Bowes. She was my first guest ever on this podcast, and we have a really great conversation. And actually, the subject of Scientology is discussed prominently on that show by chance. As you heard me say with Kathy Schenkelberg earlier, she comes up, we talk about that. It's a real fun show, and I really hope you join me. I really appreciate, after a year of podcasting, all the support I received from all of you. And just a lot of great connection, a lot of great friends. Friday of next week, again, it's part two of Tony Ortega, and I'll be spreading some more love for that year anniversary to some of my listeners and past guests and everything. So tune in for that. Until then, that about sums it up. Stay connected. Have a great week. I'm getting down to the sum of this. The sum of that. The sum of everything.
Come on.